Okay, now I'm ready. So we've been talking about our week, and mine was, it was more heady. It was in my brain a lot this week. I've really enjoyed the time that we've had here as this new group, in a sense, or momentary group, and I realize that, that's going to come to an end. In one sense, hopefully, here in the next several weeks, other congregations, get back going. But I'm also watching my employer start to struggle with what's next and what do we do next? And, they're starting to really feel the blows, from this. But then I've been contemplating that for myself a little bit more, what's going on and what it means for me. Real early on, I realized that God has given us opportunity. And when I say us, I mean the world over. If you look, this truly hit the entire world. I think there's very few individuals on this planet that don't know what's going on or hasn't been directly affected by it in one way or another. Most countries have had some type of shutdown in one sense or another. A lot of people have been away from work, away from church, and that always gives us opportunity to pause and think, is there a message here for me? And I remember back to 9/11, within just a matter of days, the reaction, at least here in the States, there was a lot of people said, I haven't been to church in a while. I'm going to head to church. And I kept thinking here a handful of weeks ago that maybe we would see or hear some of the same thing. Now, of course, the churches have been locked down, so maybe that's still yet to come. But I haven't sensed from the people I get to interact with that there's a huge wake-up call going on. And I think now we're actually past the point of opportunity for a lot of people, because just as we've been discussing, we're starting to get irritated with the lockdown in a sense, and we're ready for things to go back to normal. And there's a problem with that. If we go back to normal, there's no reason to make a change. God's giving all of us opportunity to make some serious thoughts and changes in our lives right now. So the question I want to deal with today is, do we have some changes we need to make? And are we taking opportunity of this time to make those changes? So first we have to look at, how is this impacting me? Am I okay with this? I mean, some people, I can tell you, are pretty happy with what's going on from the standpoint they get a much bigger paycheck staying at home doing nothing than what they got going to work. And they're not so much people anyhow. And so they don't mind the lack of social, social connections. And so they're just, this is fine. I don't mind this. Wish we could do this all the time. But there's a lot of people that are ready to get back to doing something that we used to call normal. And if we get back to going doing something normal again, is it actually a positive normal? Because I can tell you in my life, I've shared with even this group now, at least on one level, that 10 years ago, I made a dramatic change in my life, in my spiritual life. God brought me to the point where I had to make a decision, and I made a very strong, committed decision to follow him and put some new things into my life that I hadn't had before. And now I can, this week I'm looking back, it's like, ooh, that's over 10 years ago now. I haven't made any changes like that since then. Shouldn't have I? I mean, there's nothing more for me to change? And I know that ain't right, because just here in the last few weeks, I've had anger come up in the wrong ways, for the wrong reasons, and at the wrong people. So there's one area. I know I have to be very careful with pride. I know that's an area that I struggle with. You know, over the last couple of weeks, I did a series on stewardship. That wasn't really just for you. It's also for me, because as I shared with you, 10 years ago, I needed to alter how I was a steward of God's possessions. And I want to be that good steward, but I still realize 10 years after the fact, even though I've made some really good strides, I'm still not there yet. So for me, this period of time is becoming frustrating. Not, yes, events outside of these walls, but more so for me inside, because it's like, what am I realizing? I keep thinking about the other stuff, and I'm not using this time to think about this stuff maybe the way I should or could. And so I titled this The Power of a Changed Mind. So over the last month and a half, if you're willing to share, what's the biggest change for you? What's the biggest thing that's hit you out of all this so far, good or bad? Anybody want to share? Cindy?
Well, I think it's an ongoing thing for me, is walking with God, putting all the around that might make me worry or upset me or whatever in His hands, and it just becomes a deeper level. It's also an awareness, which I've had over the years, that there's when you have trials, there's the bad side of it, but the good side of it is that you're closer to God, and that's never bad, that you're relying more on God and you're seeing Him work things out, little details, and that's never bad. That's always a good feeling, even though you don't like the things going on around. And when all this started happening, I asked God to help me to use the time wisely, to not waste it, you know, whatever opportunity. So I am not sitting around eating bonbons, and I still haven't got my unemployment and whatever. But I can see how I'm taken care of. God's not, He hasn't left me, you know. And whatever I'm going through, I know that there's going to be the two sides. There's going to be the one where I'm closer to my Father today than I was yesterday, and tomorrow I'll be closer yet. And yeah, things are scary. I'm not here to say that they're not. I'm a single person. I mean, yes, Joe lives with me, but you know, it's a little scarier when you're a single person. But then I know God's there, and I might not see what all He's doing, but He's doing it. I know He is. I trust Him. And so I'm just learning to trust Him more every day. And that's not a bad thing in the midst of all this. So,
anybody else want to share some thoughts or issues that come up for them? I know one of the things that struck me off guard right away, and I actually got angry at it, and for Jerry and Tom, It is a different situation there, and theirs wasn't the only church that was affected this way. Some landlords just said, "You cannot come into this space. You're done holding church." But there was several church groups that very early on, I mean, long before there was, I say long, but days before there was any type of lockdown, announcements were made, we're not holding church. It's like, what? For what reason? Fear. That's my take. My take was fear. They didn't know what was going to happen, how it was going to happen, why it was going to happen, who it was going to happen to. And so based upon that, we're not going to do church anymore for the moment. And it wasn't because their landlord had kicked them out. It wasn't because every single person in their congregation had said, well, I'm not coming. They just decided, well, we shouldn't do this for the moment. And I think, was it you, Tom? That yeah, you phrased that when we start to put any type of distance between what we do with God or what he expects us to do with him, there is a distance. And it's felt almost immediately, and it spreads quicker than any virus. You take one Sabbath off to go do something that you just want to do for yourself, and you try to justify why it's okay to do this, and I guarantee a month later you'll say, well, you know, we did that and that was okay, so now we can do this. And then just a couple weeks later, well, now we can do this. And now a couple weeks go by, you haven't been to church. You haven't read your Bible. You haven't prayed. But you have justification for all of it. We have to stay in the walk no matter how hard it gets. And one of the biggest things we have to do is constantly go to God and say, what is it you'd have me do right now? And how would you have me do it? 2 Colossians 13, verse 5. Sorry, Corinthians. There I am with these abbreviations again. 2 Corinthians 13, 5. Examine yourselves to see whether you are living in faith. Why do I need to do that? I know who God is. I pray to him. I read his word. Why do I need to consider whether or not I'm actually acting in faith? Do you not realize that Jesus Christ is in you unless indeed you fail to meet the test? So we should examine ourselves, but we are in the middle of a test. If we said we've turned our entire life over to God, and I'm sure many of us have phrased that, is that 100% true? 100% true. Not 99.99999 true, but 100% true. Will we give our entire life over to God at any time for any reason? I don't think we've done that. I know I haven't. And the reason I'm talking about this today is over the last couple days, I realized, okay, I haven't been examining myself the way I should. Well, now I'm examining myself, but I don't have clear insight now as to what's the area or areas that I need to start working on. And so today's not about that. Today is about, are we willing to examine ourselves? And then when it's pointed out to us by God that we need to make a change, are we going to make the change? Period. Yes or no? No. Well, if this happens, or right after this happens, then no. It's when God says, here's something I'd like you to do. Will we say, yes, I'm ready to go right now? And it doesn't matter what our spouse has to do with it. Our tiny little grandchild, our congregation, our employer, our school, the medical community, doesn't matter what they have to say about it. It only matters what God has to say about it. Are we willing to make the change? There are areas in our lives where we take control of and we don't realize that I've taken control of this. And quite honestly, I do a really good job at it, so I don't need God involved with this area of my life because I'm really good with it. And obviously, he's blessing me because I'm really good at taking control of this in my life. And one of them for me was finances. I shared that over 10 years ago, God had to tap me on the shoulder and said, yes, you've done some homework. You've learned how to invest some money, and you've been doing that. But you haven't considered that you're not really the one in control. You're the steward. I'm going to show you some things. And I had to go through some bumps and bruises along with my family. It wasn't just me. I took others along for the ride. It wasn't my intentions. I just hadn't thought it all the way out. And now I realize when it comes to finances, I have to go to God on everything, not some things, on everything, and say, would you have me do this, or am I starting to veer off a path that you've chosen for me, and I just don't realize it in the moment? It can be as simple as, Father, I kind of would like to go to the store right now. Anything I need to know about before I take off? How often do we have little prayers like that as we're jumping into the car, as we're getting ready to walk out the door? How often do we just go to Father and just say, is there anything that I don't know about right now that you'd have me become aware of in the moment? And every now and then we just kind of get a gut feeling, wait a second, maybe I shouldn't be here right now. Maybe I shouldn't go that direction. Maybe I'm supposed to go this direction. I can tell you a little story. Friends of mine, one of them was in the hospital for an extended period, and I went up to visit them, and the spouse had just left. And so when I got there, they told me, my spouse has just left, and it didn't go well. I said, what do you mean it didn't go well? Well, we got in a big argument. What? And these two aren't necessarily known for that. You know, maybe not agreeing, but they made it clear this was an argument. And I said, well, what do you mean? And what's there to argue with, in a sense? And so they shared with me. And I said, is that how you phrased it to your spouse? Yeah. How'd your spouse phrase it to you? Well, like this. And I said, you two weren't listening to each other. You both said the exact same thing. What? They said what you said. You just thought they argued with you. Wait, what? And in a matter of a few moments, they went, you're right. They did say that. And that is what they would normally do. And my mind had just shut down for the moment. I didn't allow their communication to come all the way through. I put filters on. And so I leave the hospital, and I'm really hurting because the other spouse hasn't had this realization or opportunity for it, and I know they're hurting, probably even worse. And so as I'm walking out of the hospital, I ask God, I said, Father, will you just bless them somehow with the ability to understand what just happened between the two of them? I'm in the car driving, and Lori calls and says, are you close to home? And I said, well, no, I'm heading that way. She says, will you stop and pick up a gallon of milk? Okay. So I pulled into the parking lot, and I get out, and here comes the spouse walking out of the store. This is way past their bedtime. What were they doing in the store? It's literally a blizzard out. What were they doing in the store? And I stopped and I said, how are you doing? And they kind of blew it off, not knowing what all I knew. And I said, well, I just come from the hospital. Oh. I said, can we go back inside and talk for a minute? And I highly expected them to say, no, I need to get home. It's snowing really bad. It's late. And they said, I would really like that. We go inside, and I share exactly with them what I shared with the other, and the exact same thing happened. I said, I didn't realize they were telling me that, what I was trying to express to them. And you could just see the relief just wash over them, like, because they didn't want to be in an argument, and they certainly didn't want to leave it open-ended as an argument, and that's what had happened. And I looked at that, and it's like, Father, I asked you to bless them, and you blessed me with an opportunity to be at the right place at the right time. So how often do we go before God and just say, what change would you have me make even right at this very moment? Not simply on the big stuff, but on even all the little things. Because he's God. He wants to be our God. He wants to be our creator. He wants to be our healer, our provider, our protector. And think of how often we say, no, no, it's okay, I got it. And we go about life our own way. And he says, okay, I really wanted to bless you with this, but you chose a little bit different route. Let's turn over to Genesis 25. Because we don't ask him just simply, what would you have me do? We should be asking him for a little bit more. We should be asking him, would you give me opportunity to be a vessel for you? Now here a couple weeks ago, we met up here and we prayed together and we asked God to pour out on us better understanding and ability to use our gifts and talents. Has any of us since then reiterated that prayer? Father, we asked you, so we know you're going to answer us. Is it today? You want me to utilize something today? What gift would you have me, and how would you have me go about doing it? Genesis 25 and verse 21. The other thing that we don't stop and consider is we're always worried about today, right now, right here. Very rarely do we actually stop and think about future. It's about, okay, I'm hungry right now, right? I'm sick right now. I'm out of work right now. I want to be over there right now, right? We don't think about the future, and so because of that, we allow our emotions to dictate what we do right now rather than going to God and say, I know you've got a much bigger plan for me, so am I getting in way of your plan if I do this right now? Genesis 25, verse 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and his wife Rebekah conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it is to be this way, why do I live? So she went to inquire of the Lord. She was in some type of great pain. Because she literally said, God, I'm not certain why you're keeping me alive. This is basically now unbearable for me. I'd almost rather not be alive. I'm hurting. And look how God responds to her. He says, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. So he said, I know in the moment it's uncomfortable. But what we really need to look at is the future. Not just for two people or their family, but for two nations. And apparently, it sounds like, without it being in the text, it sounds like, oh, okay, I didn't realize. Will you give me a little bit of relief from this, and I'll carry on caring for these babies. God pointed her to the future. Verse 24, when her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red. All his body was like a hairy mantle, so they named him Esau. And afterwards, his brother came out, with his hand gripping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man living in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he was fond of game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Verse 29. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, notice it's Jacob now, not the hunter. This is the one living in the tents, is cooking stew. Esau came in from the field, and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stuff, for I am famished." Therefore he is called Edom. And Jacob said, "First, sell me your birthright." He's hungry. Not just a little bit, a lot. Doesn't say how long he'd went without food. Maybe it'd been several days. Maybe it'd been a big handful of days. But the only thought on his mind at the moment is, give me some food. F.B. Meyer wrote some thoughts about this passage. He says, in the thought of that age, the birthright carried with it the spiritual leadership of the tribe to be the priest of the family, to stand between the Most High and the rest of the household, to receive divine communications and executive and execute the divine will, and to be the direct line of the Messiah, such were some of the privileges that gathered around this position. So a birthright, and we've talked a little bit about this, the firstborn was to be, in a sense, the higher priest within the family unit, to take care of spiritual matters within the family unit. So there's a lot of responsibility to go with it, but there are also a lot of blessings that go with it. And this is what Jacob wants from Esau. He understands the value of future. He knows it's not his, but for some reason he thinks, I can buy it, and now's my opportunity. So Jacob says, first sell me your birthright. And Esau says, I'm about to die. What use is this birthright to me anyhow? He's only concerned in the moment. He's not concerned about, not even thinking about any future whatsoever. And Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Esau was fully aware that this was a very formal contract he just entered into. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Despised there means he devalued it. He didn't put the value on it that it deserved. He threw it away for a bowl of stew. We can put it this way. For a few moments of gratification, self-gratification, he permanently altered his future with very negative consequences. Think about that. For a few moments of gratification. Because he's going to be hungry again in just a few matter of hours. Is he going to have another birthright to sell? What's his game plan then? What choices do we make on a regular basis, decisions that are just for our gratification and have no thought of our future, especially the future that God's planned out for us? I say all of them. Because right now, today, this society is all about basing decisions on feelings and emotions. And we get caught up in it because we hear it all the time. Doesn't matter where we turn, we hear it all the time. And so it's real easy for us to start taking on the same attitude. Well, I can do it, they do it. Or I'm just as needy in that area as they are, so I might as well have it too. It's not enough for us to change our circumstances. We need to change our mindset. And this is huge. This is what's difficult. Because circumstances are very easy to change. We can gratify ourselves no matter what the issue is. We can gratify ourselves. And that may change our circumstances momentarily, but it doesn't change our mindset. Luke 15 is another story that we know really well. In verse 13, a few days later, the young son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. This is the prodigal son. He's received his inheritance way prematurely because he asked for it. Again, not thinking of his future. And now he set out. In verse 14, when he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to, He went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up, go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while his father was still afar, his father saw him and was filled with compassion and ran and put his arms around him and kissed him." Notice in verse 16, he makes a statement that may not have jumped out to many. He says he would have gladly filled himself with the pods from the pigs that the pigs were given. He could have stolen food from the pigs, but he didn't. I think it's because he thought he was considering his future. If I get caught stealing, not feeding the pigs the way I'm supposed to, I'll be in an even worse situation. And he was in pretty bad straits already. He didn't simply satisfy his desire. He totally changed his mindset. Because when he left his father's, he was someone. He was rich. In his own mind, anyways. And now he realizes, I'm not rich. And actually, what's back at home is much better than I ever realized. A total mind change. And a mind change that he's willing to accept. Because he easily could have thought, all right, I don't like it being here, but I'm certainly not going back home. I don't understand why my dad does things the way he does them. Then my brother, he's always working, never takes time off for fun. But he didn't do that. He realized, okay, back at home, there's something still there for me. And it's positive. He was willing to go back as a servant. He is ready to change his entire life. Not just one aspect, his entire life. He's ready to alter so that he can be provided for. A pig finds contentment in a mud hole. If a sheep accidentally falls into that same mud hole, they are out of there just as fast as they can, right? They don't want anything to do with that mud hole. That's the kind of mindset we have to be willing to change. We literally have to go from having the mindset of a pig that, okay, no, this is comfortable. I'm good here. I can stay here. Kind of like it. Even my friends are right here. My family's right here. To the mindset of a sheep where we go, ooh, I don't see where this is a good place for me. There's others here, but I'm not seeing my friends and my family here. I don't see benefit for this in the long term. The sheep wants out and is willing to do absolutely anything they can to get out. So let's talk about computers for a moment. I think all of us have one. Inside the computer software, the operating system, is some settings called default settings. That means if I decide to, in the course of writing a paper, I decide to change the font style or the size, I can do that and it'll spit out. But the next time I go to open up the writer, it defaults back to the old font and the old size. And I have to change it again, right? Can I change the default setting? I can change the temporary setting, right? But what about the default setting? It always wants to go back to that old font. I don't like that old font. It makes me take two or three extra steps every time I open up this software. I have to change the font because I want to use this font. Can we change that default setting? We can, can't we? There's a way to do it. The challenge is we have to know who, the computer needs to know who we are on whether or not it will allow us to make those changes. It looks for one of two things. It looks for a user or it looks for an administrator. A user probably can't change the default settings. But the administrator can go in the back door and change the default settings. And if I'm administrator over that computer, I can go in, probably have to type my password so it knows it's me, that I truly am the administrator. And I can go say, from now on, the default setting for fonts is this, not that. Permanently, forever, until I say other. And it goes, oh, okay. We need to change our default setting up here. We need to stop making temporary changes, but permanent positive changes. Now we need to consider, is it me that makes these changes? Who's the administrator of this thing? Am I? I would hope so. But how often do we allow Satan to be in control of the default settings as our administrator? And then we're just simply a user, right? Philippians 2, verse 5. Let the same mind be in you that was in Jesus Christ. The same mind. The way that was just phrased is we have the opportunity to have the same mind as us as Jesus Christ. Do we want that opportunity? Will we take that opportunity? Verse 6. Who, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness and being found in human form, He humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Are we willing to truly give our entire life over to God? Period. 100%. To the point of death. We talked about here last week or a couple of weeks ago, I think, about it. I brought it up in the email, I know, last night. And I think all of you would have received it. Maybe not you guys. Sorry. I don't have your email. But I made the comment that when Moses died, his eyes were not weak. He had vigor. He was strong. Physically, he could have kept on living. Why did he die? Because God said, your time is up. Period. This is the time I have allotted you. And this is huge. We don't look at it this way. We're not in control of our death day or date. God is. For Eric Leedy, it looks like his is about up. But at the same time, Eric and his family have been greatly blessed with the knowledge of that date is about to expire much sooner than they'd hoped for. And over the last couple of years, they've spent tons of quality time together. And I suspect Eric, especially, has spent a lot of quality time contemplating God and his role in his life. But in what we're going through at the moment, it doesn't matter how many layer of mask I put on, how many gloves I wear, how much sanitizer I put in my hands, how much distance I put between somebody. If God wants me to pass away from the COVID-19, I'm going to pass away from COVID-19, period. There's nothing I can do to stop it. If God wants me to live through this pandemic, and I use that word very lightly, I'm going to live through it. Especially if I'm trying to walk in the walk that he has prepared for me. If I'm not trying to do that, what good am I to him? And I shared with you my story of 10 years ago that I went to the feast and I had to sit down with Andy, a good friend of mine, at the feast. And during that conversation, I was asked three questions, and I phrase it that God asked the questions through Andy. One was, do you read his word? I take my Bible to church. Do you pray to him? Oh, every now and then I might ask him for something. The third one is, do I give back what he requires? Every now and then I feel like I have a little bit extra I can give. And the response back was, Aaron, you're going through the worst situation in your life you've ever experienced. And you just told me you're not giving God any reason to step in and help you out of it. Are we giving God reason to step in and help us through this? A little backstory of Andy, because I look at him in a totally different light now these days, and I've shared this with him. I didn't write this in my notes. James, I want to say it's the last verse in James 4. Somebody want to look that up for me real quick? Or the last couple of verses of James 4. Huh? The last two verses. What's it say?
But now you boast in your own arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, if anyone knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin.
That's the last verse of 4? What about the last verse of 3? Maybe I got the wrong chapter.
Gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial,
It's five. Okay, sorry, it's five. Since you're right there, can you switch over to five? Which, is it two verses? The last? Okay, 5, 19, and 20.
Brethren.
Can you give him the mic, somebody?
Excuse me. Brethren, if anyone among you strays from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that he who brings back a sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall cover a multitude of sins.
Those are two hugely powerful verses to me, because Andy had had the opportunity to share with me that as a very young adult, he was a handful. He was heavily into drugs, alcohol, promiscuous, even though his family was very strong in the church, he was going the wrong direction in almost every way possible, and to the worst extent you could think of. And he needed help. And he meets this girl in school that he ends up marrying. And she didn't agree to marry him right away, because she didn't see God in his life at all, but she definitely had God in her life, and she just hoped that maybe she could be a good influence. But for some reason, God made it clear to her that she needed to marry this guy. So she did. And he kept seeing in his wife contentment and ease, even though she was, excuse me, I got something caught in my throat. She had a very personal struggle of her own she was going through, and she'd share it with him. But he just saw something as far as the spiritual that he hadn't seen through his family, or just hadn't been able to witness through his family before, the way his wife was witnessing. And he got to the point where he literally went to God and said, I'm killing myself. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. And he went cold turkey. Cold turkey is not something you can do very easily, no matter what the situation is. That's difficult. But Andy did. He made a drastic mind change. He reset all of his defaults in a different direction, and he started pursuing God and his will for him. And you move forward, it was probably about 10 years or so, and Andy finds himself sitting down in a little corner with Aaron Baker, who's not struggling with anywhere near the same things that Andy struggled with, but needs the same kind of help and needs to make a very drastic change in his life. And why was Andy there? Because God could trust Andy with Aaron's life. And when you read that verse, God says, Andy, all of those sins are way beyond you. How's it phrased again, Jake?
Turn
the mic back on.
Brethren, if it,
it's on.
Hello? Brethren, if anyone among you strays from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that he who brings back a sinner from the error of his ways shall save a soul from death and shall cover a multitude of sins.
I'm thankful God put me in that chair across from Andy that night, but now I want to be put in the other chair. I want God to be able to trust me with somebody else's life. I don't know if I'm there yet. But that's, I think that's what we should be striving for. Are we someone that God can trust us with the life of somebody else? Because we talked about gifts and talents. We talked about finances. We've talked about relationships. That he's entrusted all those things with us. And we need to be good stewards of. But what we haven't talked about is, can I be trusted as a good steward over someone else's life? It's not until the point that he can trust us that he's going to put us in front of that situation. It's not a knock on any one of us. It's just, what are we striving for? Do we realize how big the stakes are? It's not just my life I need to be concerned about. It's everybody else's life. Because he doesn't want just simply Aaron Baker walking into the kingdom and being blessed by that. He wants to bless Aaron Baker with the opportunity to walk into the kingdom as a priest. That he can trust over multitudes. If we think we're going to die and be rewarded simply with comfort, I'm sorry, you are in the wrong building. Our reward is eternal life with opportunity to share it with others. And it's going to take work, especially now. So where do we start at? We all have fears of some sort. And the reality is, we should not. He's told us he will provide for us, he will protect us, he will take care of us in every circumstance, no matter what, as long as we have faith in him. So if we have fears in our life, we've got a problem. If there's anything about this thing that's going on out there right now with COVID-19 that has made you afraid, that's where we start at. Why are you afraid? Because it doesn't matter if God chooses to take your life 10 minutes from now or 10 years from now. When he does, it will be for the right reasons at the right time. And yes, there will be some hurt feelings, emotions for us and them in the moment. But it's because he knows it's the best thing for us and for others. So fear of death should not be a part of the equation. There's still things I'd like to do. I'd like to see my granddaughter, you know, grow older. I'd like to see more grandkids. But whatever his timeline is for me, I'm okay with that. There's times that I should put on a mask or some gloves. And I think there's times I can go and ask him, Father, am I supposed to really be concerned about this? Should I be protecting myself in these ways? And he'll let you know. I haven't sensed that about this. I'm not worried about this particular advice. But here in the future, something else could come along where he says, you had masks and gloves around you. It's like the guy that was up on his roof during the middle of the flood, and you've heard the story, somebody come along in a rowboat and said, you will save me. No, don't worry about me. I've asked God. God's going to save me. Then the chopper, comes along and tries to save me. He said, no, God's going to save me. And when he finally meets God, God says, I provided the rowboat and chopper, and you didn't take any of them. But again, all that is us continually going to God and say, what is it you want me to do? Open my eyes to the reality of truth, your truth. Did you place this here for me? And we are desperately going to need that in the near future. because he's made it very clear there's going to be deception like we could never, ever fathom. Deception to the point where we feel like God is the one that's doing that over there when in fact he is not. And if we don't know what Matthew 25 says, 24 says about the end times, then we can't look over there and go, oh, he warned me not to look at that. That's deception. But it will be so powerful, and I like using the analogy, the Israelites come up to this body of water with an army chasing them, and they don't know what's going to happen, and all of a sudden, the waters part. There's nothing we can wrap our head around geologically wise, scientific wise, that would make a body of water just part. Right? That is absolutely 100% miraculous. Correct? If we saw that, if we were there and witnessed that, there's no other way we could explain it except for that was absolutely miraculous. And because it's miraculous, it must be from God. But what if in the coming times we actually witness a body of water parting? And someone walks down into that part and says, I'm Christ, I'm here. Why? That's not the sign, huh? Him standing in parted water is not the sign. No, it's not the sign. And we need to know that, and we need to firmly believe that, so that when we do see waters part, we go, that's pretty impressive, but God didn't tell me to watch for that. Let's start dealing with our fears. Let's get those out. God's got our back in every respect. He has consistently shown us that he protects us. He provides for us. He sustains us. He blesses us in abundance. No matter what our circumstances are, he has us. Yes, Cindy? Here, wait.
Just this morning, I listened to two really short messages, and it was two ways God showed me how to pray for some situations, circumstances in my life. That, I mean, those circumstances aren't changed since I prayed for them, but he showed me how. So it was a way, and they are things that are ongoing. And so when things are ongoing, they have a huge, profound effect on your life. And those things haven't changed, but that gives me great hope, because when I see something proactive that I think is the right thing led from God to do, that gives me a lot of hope, regardless if I see anything happen immediately about that. And so all the details, it's amazing all the details that we can't even imagine that he'll come up with, you know, to dispel our fears or to show us what to do.
Yeah, if we're afraid of anything right now, then that means our faith level is diminished over an area of our life. We've got a faith problem. And if we have a faith problem, then why should God allow us the opportunity that he allowed Andy with Aaron? Why should he allow us to try saving somebody else's life when we're afraid of our own? So let's stop thinking about the short term. Let's focus on our future, our eternal future, and worrying about how our now affects all of those around us. That's all I have. Cindy, you got another comment?
Stay there.
This person that I met at the store, as we were talking, I mean, it was amazing. We came to the conclusion that at this time, people that are Christians at this time, walking the walk and living through this, that we felt like God was going to take us to another level, because we're going to be living in definitely another level, and God's going to be taking us there, those of us who live through this and survive this. That's what, and we it was just amazing how we were like-minded about so many things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real good analogy about the default in the computer. I didn't think of it that way. But years and years ago, too, when I first developed my change, you know, was it I did allow God to do everything in my life and I changed. I know I did. That was basically the only important thing in my life for a while. And then I got to the point, like, and other people do the same thing, trying to change other people's default settings. And that doesn't work. Only God can change that. But as you say, yeah, years ago I wrote a letter to a lot of people, and I was very happy in my life. We just had kids, had wife, had house, and had God. And really enjoyed my change. But as years go on, you know, if you don't keep in the book and in what your relationship with God is, you do tend to drift. And what Tom says, you know, even when I'm home alone on the Sabbath, and we were last week, and, you know, I have peace and, you know, tranquility, but you do, you know, you do miss, and you don't gain as much as you do when you're around other like-minded people that are focused on God. But to make a long story short, a couple of years ago, too, I started to really fret about stuff and be worried, and I sweat at night, and I've told that, you know, like I get my church damp in the morning, and I'm worrying about stuff, and I'm like, why do I worry? Because I know God, I know I've changed, I know the direction I'm going, I shouldn't be worried. So just a few months ago, I really started to change again, and my default setting is basically and it really has worked. I mean, I don't like any type of debates or arguments, or even though I do, I mean, we have discussions, and but with anybody else, even at work, if somebody's got a different opinion, different thesis about something, and I'll let them speak it, but I'll never argue with them. I never try to debate with them, and I'll just sort of, you know, okay, I'll just let God deal with that. Or if he wants a question and ask me, I fine. And that has really helped. It really helped me not to debate, not to argue, not to, all right, no, you're wrong, I'm right, you know, I'll explain it to you, because you really won't. All these, the five, my wife likes to watch that. I can't stand any kind of debates on any of the stuff anymore. And I used to watch them, but you're not going to really, all the debates back and forth, Hannity, you know, Tucker always is doing, although I do enjoy some of the synopsis of what they debate about, but they never change anybody else's mind, never. They never get the other person to hardly ever realize that maybe you're talking the truth, you know. So you got to let God do that, but you got to change your own. And so, yeah, lately I've been a lot better with that, because, you know, and it is about, no matter what the situation is, you can't have the fear. And if you have the fear, you don't have, you're not focused enough on God. And the more I focus on God, the better I get. And I'm getting to that point, too. I think I have a real, real, real strong relation with God, and keep it there. I want to keep it there. And I found just debating or, you know, contesting somebody, that just doesn't work for me. I try not to do anymore, you know. And like I say, I'll just walk away from it. And I will do that at home, too, eventually. With my children, my child too, you know. If I say anything with my son Ryan, it doesn't come out right, so I just don't. Okay, that's fine. I let it go. Otherwise, I tried to argue with him before, but don't work. So, anyways, you do have to have it, and I have. I've been sleeping better. I've been feeling better if I get this fear out of me, and that's really a key factor. Get the fear out of your life. Period.
Anybody else? Nope. Clay's mic.
Yes, Cindy, you had brought up the fact that recently you went through a situation where you were struggling to see God working, and for whatever reason he wasn't giving you a definite yes or no answer, and you had to remind yourself to just trust him. And you know, that clicked with something in my head, that God is somebody who immediately gives us an answer every single time. It's not always a yes, it's not always no. Sometimes it's just simply not right now, or wait, you know, trust me, I've got this. But every time, he's immediately, and even before the situation starts, he's already working on it. And throughout every example that I've seen in the Bible, if it's a case where he's not telling us yes or no right away, and he's just saying wait, or trust me, I've got this, that means that the plans that he has in mind is not simply to give us a yes or no. It's for much bigger than anything we could imagine, and we may not be able to get to even see the result of those plans in this physical life, but they're there, and they're huge. And like you said, we've got to remind ourselves that, look, I don't understand everything, but God's in control, and that's all that matters right now. Dad, you also brought up here a little while back the pigs enjoy being, you know, just in the mud and wallowing in it, and the sheep want nothing to do with it. But it actually goes a lot deeper than that. You know, all throughout Scripture, Christians are related as, you know, sheep, and sinners, or the Gentiles of the world are related to as the pigs. Pigs don't just enjoy wallowing in the mud, they actually need it. See, pigs, unlike a lot of other animals, don't sweat. So they need water or mud in order to be able to stay cool. And if we're relating pigs to sinners, it's a really good example, because pigs need those physical little moment pleasures, those little moment gratifications, in order to keep them going, because they don't have God there to keep them cool, to keep them on the path, to keep them where they need to be going. And sheep, it's not just simply that they don't like the mud. If a sheep gets mud on its wool, not only does it weigh it down, just as our sins and our guilty pleasures weigh us down, but it also makes it harder for them to be able to move, harder for them to be able to defend themselves, harder for them to be able to just go on about their lives. It makes them struggle. And so in that sense, us as sheep, not only do we need to stay away from the mud, but we need to be able to help others through it. And, you know, just as it said back in James 5, you know, 19 and 20, if we're willing to just set aside our own faults, failures, concerns, worries, and trust God that he's got us, that we can go and protect our brother from the sin that they're going through, to keep them from the mud pit, it's not just going to simply save them from that sin. It's going to do a lot more to save their life, to keep them on the path, and to make an impact onto those around them, as well as an impact on our life.
I think we need to understand, as a people, as a church itself, this is a watershed moment, I believe. You know, what is happening to the world has never happened before. And I don't think things are going to be the same ever again. If you look at our government, you look at what they're giving themselves, this power, and what is their famous saying is, don't let a crisis go to waste. If you think for a moment that they're going to give up this power after, well, I myself don't think that this is going to completely go away. But like I said, I think this is a watershed moment in our existence here. I mean, yes, we've had world wars where the whole world was involved and stuff like that. But we're being pursued by something that isn't even there. And I mean, Scripture proves that out in the fear that is in people. I mean, it's just, You see it on the news. You see it talking to people. It's like the invisible, you know, fear is there. And like I said, I don't think we're ever going to be the same again as a country, as the world. It you know, as things go forward from here, I think, again, we're in some times, and I think we're in biblical times that are ahead.
Yeah, Cindy had something. Yeah, and with that, I this is not the last of these types of events. In fact, I think we're going to see them more often. I don't think it's going to be in our 10 years before something like this happens again. I think it's going to be a matter of months or years, you know, or just a small amount of years, and we're going to see something somewhat similar, but even greater.
Earthquake that just happened in California, 6.9, 6.5, something like that. Well, they said that the structure of that earthquake, the way it manifests itself in two different directions, they said something big is still, because it didn't, it wasn't on the San Andreas, but they can't figure out how the San Andreas didn't move with this fault that let go. I mean, when you look at things like that, you look at the COVID, you look at the earth itself, the crazy weather patterns they have, they're already saying that there looks like in the Atlantic there's a chance of a huge storm brewing there. Who knows? They won't know until tomorrow or Monday. So.
Well, just how something happened this week that I forgot about. It seems like so much is happening anymore, and thoughts and things you go through that you don't even realize to recount it to someone. But I, one day, I had read something in the news, and I wanted to reach out to someone in the Republican Party in Lansing, because I wanted to feel like I was not completely surrounded, that I was, because I know people are out there that think the way I do. Not that I think perfectly, I'm not saying that, or how I believe, but I went to Google, I asked for the Republican Party in Lansing, and I got this phone number, and I called it and left a message, and so this man called me back, young man, you could hear, because there was a baby in the background, and everybody's working from home, and he calls, and so we're talking and about things, and I'm saying, well, who can a person reach out to when you have a concern and you want to talk to someone about it? And living where I do in the middle of liberal country, why there wasn't anybody that I felt like I could. But as I began talking to about different things, I said, well, you know, I haven't gotten my unemployment. So he gave me the number of two local representatives. He wasn't sure which was mine for the where I live, and also a senator. And so so I reached out to them trying to find someone that could help me to get my unemployment, because you can't reach anyone by phone when you call unemployment. I mean, that's impossible. And so I've got a senator, the local senator, and one of the representatives now helping, you know, going to submit something to try to get something done for me. So this is like a two-step thing. I had the thought, call this guy. He calls me. He gives me information to call someone else. And I was recounting this to Joe, telling him the story. I said, look how God works. I said, you may ask for help, and he may not take you down a straight path. And so this is just one more testimony to me to build my faith of how he works. So, and so when I pray about something, if I don't get a direct answer, it's just not going to happen just that way. Well, he must not be listening to me. Well, that's not true. And the way he answers my prayer might not be the way I would think in my head it should just be answered. But that's okay. That just builds my faith. It's just one more thing I can keep in my mind, in my repertoire, that he's got it. And I might not, what I see might not be the answer, but he's got it, and he's going to take me whatever way he wants. And it's just, for me, it's wonderful when these things happen and I see them, because I ask God to help me not miss things he's doing. Because when I can share it with my son then, and he's like shaking his head, you know. So it's one more way I can be an example to my son and share something positive. So that's exciting to me, and maybe it's not, might not be a big deal to you, but I can see, I can see that.